fine. Can you all hear me? My earpiece is just about to fall off. Hold on a second. I hope that's... Is that settled okay? Can you hear me? I don't know if it's going to stay, but however. So, my name's Katrina Payton. For those of you who haven't met me before, you've done well avoiding me thus far. But I usually find that people who try to avoid the police have got something to hide. So, make sure you make yourself known to me. So, I was asked to come along and obviously speak this morning because Alistair's on a sabbatical. And last week, I can honestly say, as I sat in the pews where you are and he spoke about this break, I suddenly realised I'd been so caught up in my own life that it hadn't even dawned on me that working one day a week required a 3-month holiday. So I really had to reflect on my own selfishness when I thought about the hours that I work for no time off. But I was actually also just speaking to Alistair as I went out the door last week, and I said, you know, information's normally received in the context of what's gone before. And he was just laughing, and I said, so it was a good job that you weren't so good this week. However, when I relayed that story just as I came into the church today, and there were a few people giving me words of encouragement as I went to the toilet for my pre-match nerves, they said the opposite. They actually said, and I told them that story, and before I could come out with my punchline, they said, oh, unfortunately for you, it was really good, wasn't it? So, there's a couple of things I do feel I owe it to you, because when he spoke last week, he spoke about how it was important that we try to survive without him. I'm mentioning him because I know without a doubt he will be listening in at some point, and if me or anybody else isn't good enough over the next 3 weeks, I have no doubt he will make an early return. So whilst I hope through our words and speaking that in some way we could speed God's return, I very much genuinely would say, heaven forbid that what we say would speed Alistair's return. And the final point for Alistair, just in case he is listening, it actually just made me laugh when I came in and thought, you know, I might be taking the service, but I'm not quite in his league yet. I don't want to sit in his seat at the side. And then I looked at the side and I saw the box of hankies that he's clearly strategically placed there as I was to sit in mourning that he was gone. So anyway, I'm here for 3 weeks, which seems a strange number, but when Alistair asked me to speak, working out shifts and on call, it worked out that I could manage these 3 weeks, which works out good because you might have heard in communication they talk about the power of three, which means that you simplify your message, you keep it, provide balance to your message, and it keeps people engaged if you've got 3 points. So I'm going to be speaking to you for 3 weeks, and there might even be a prize for full attendance if we get to the end of that. Again, I had to think, you know, what am I going to say to not just a church congregation, but Stirling Baptist Church? You are no ordinary congregation, let me tell you, having been in a few churches. You are blessed with an incredible team of ministers who can present God's word in a very practical, theological, even got a bit of historical context to it. What on earth could I, as a police officer, have to say to you this morning? But I was reminded when I thought about what I was going to speak about over these next 3 weeks from God to say, do you know what, Katrina? When I call you, I equip you. And I have a promise and a purpose for your life, and the purpose for your life was to be a police officer, and it's exactly those skills and that knowledge that you're going to use in my life, and he's going to use to hopefully help me let you visualize again his promises and his intention. But what I will say is I will come back to those words that I got and I thought that I truly believed when he said God will equip me, because that was put to the test this week. So you've obviously seen the first slide. Over the next 3 weeks, I'm going to be talking about crisis response this week, crisis communication next week, where we'll get an opportunity. David spoke about we're entering a period of really waiting and listening to God. And I'm going to talk next week about that communication, about active listening, because it's not passive. And then I'm going to go on and talk in my final week about crisis prevention. I don't suppose you would have expected anything else from a police officer. It's kind of what I deal with day in and day out. But I'm not here to tell you a sad story. I'm not here to present doom and gloom, because through those crises, I want to remind you of the positive impact that God can have in your life, because he's chosen you and he has a plan for you. And so when we look at crisis, if you actually look at the definition of crisis, it's any event which might lead to an unstable and dangerous situation for an individual, for a group, for a church congregation, a community. But actually the Chinese, I think, have got it right. Because they are, the symbols that they use to depict a crisis is danger and opportunity. And so I would say to you this morning that what a crisis does is it provides an opportunity for change. And so I'm going to start by asking you this question, and this is a challenge, not for the end, but for now. How satisfied are you with your relationship with God? Are you like the church that we read about in Revelations 3 and 17 that says, I am rich, I have prospered, I've grown wealthy, and I need nothing? Because if you're in that position, one, there'll be a warning towards the end where we say the present isn't permanent, but actually God's purpose for you is to change. How different are you now, today, this minute, from when you were last year, last month, last week, yesterday? Have you changed? You see, God commands us to produce. He says in his word in John 15 and 6 that he has chosen us to bear fruit, fruit that will last. And to produce anything, if you look at the definition of producing something, it means to make or manufacture from raw components. To produce anything, you need to change. There's a change process. And sometimes we get mixed up with the difference between producing and activity. There's lots of activity. And the devil's quite happy that we're all active, as long as we're not producing. And so to produce, the change needs to take place. And the change starts with us, not our circumstances. And I'll go on and talk about that very practically from what I deal with day in and day out, because it's really important that you grasp it's not about the circumstances changing. It's about you changing in the circumstances. But before about that, I go on to talk about that within the relationship of crisis response. I was also thinking September, the first Sunday. And if you look at September, it's the only month where its position in the calendar depicts the same number of letters in its name, which is 9. Just a wee bit useless information for you. Just to check if you're listening, I'll ask questions at the end. But also some facts about September. It's actually the worst month for shares. It's of no relevance to me, but for those of you who may have shares, September's not going to be a good month. The 26th of September is the most popular birthday for those born in the UK over the last 20 years. Now, for those of you that are quick at maths, you'll be able to work out that Christmas really is the most wonderful time of the year. And also, the film One Day in September is the only film with the name September in its title that has won an Oscar. And for those of you who haven't seen that film, I would recommend it to you, but it actually is a film about the Israeli athletes who were murdered at the Munich Olympics. I don't know if you remember, back in 1972, there were 11 Israeli athletes who were taken hostage, and after a period of negotiation, they were murdered along with a German police officer, and they were murdered by a Palestinian group called Black September. And when I was thinking about that, it led very naturally on to what I'm going to talk to you about today, because as a result of that incident, the FBI really reviewed how they dealt with negotiating scenarios. How did they actually look at negotiation and find themselves in a better position to influence and change behaviour. And out of that came the behavioural change staircase. And we should have a picture of that staircase coming up. And you see, I'm going to talk about this in a while, and I'll talk about that person as well that you see. But this was what came out from their work, a behavioural change staircase. You see, it's a process to change and influence someone's behaviour. What we say as negotiators is that what makes it a crisis is a person's response to it. It's their behaviour. And for it to stop being a crisis, we need to find a way of influencing their behaviour without force. And you see, God's told us that we are all going to change. In Philippians 1:6, he said, "He who began a good work in you will carry it on until complete, until the day of Jesus Christ." So when I go on and talk about time, there is no end to the change process. There are no quick fixes. This is going to keep going. And you see, you might be sitting there thinking, well, that's good because I'm not that happy with where I'm at or my circumstances or things that are happening. But the reality is very few of us like change. Change is really stressful. I've had to say that the only person that likes change is a baby with a wet nappy. Most of us like the status quo. We like the stability of what we know. We don't like to face change. And so sometimes we look at our lives and we think we're doing okay. Things are comfortable. We've got shelter, we've got food. And because of that, things spiritually seem to be quite good. Until a crisis hits and we maybe lose our job or we face death or bereavement. And then what happens? We go into a bit of a crisis. We start to become anxious and worried, sometimes depressed. And actually, because of that, and because of our reaction to it, that's what the crisis is, our response to that. And you see, God wants to be able to say to us that he wants to use our crisis situations as his opportunity to change us. There's a quote from Max Lucado who says that when a potter is baking a pot and he wants to test its solidity, he takes it out the oven and thumps it. If it sings, it's ready. If it thuds, he puts it back in the oven. So if you feel that you might be in the oven, it's not punishment, but it's because God's still wanting to change you. And you see, we speak about God can change caterpillars into butterflies, sand into pearls, coal into diamonds. With time and pressure, he's going to change you too. And notice what he uses, time and pressure. We heard in Philippians, it's until the day of Jesus. So it's ongoing. It will be no end, your change process in this lifetime. And I think for me, that's quite a good quote to use next time when I'm turning up at my crisis scenario and I've got my firearms and my public order team growling at me at the thought of a significant period of time going to pass them by because negotiators have turned up. At least now I'll be able to say it might take us a while to influence behaviour, but we're quicker than God. It'll happen much quicker. And you see, the Bible's full of examples. If you don't believe, you know, does God really want to change us? The reality is, yes, and we've got so many examples in the Bible. You see, the examples in the Bible, if we go back to Abraham, there was a pensioner, became the father of a nation. We look at Joseph, who was a prisoner and became the governor of Egypt. We look at David, who was a shepherd, a murderer, an adulterer, who not only became king of Israel, but he also became the bloodline for Jesus. We look at Mary, who was a virgin and became the Son of God. And we look at Peter, who we're going to go on and learn a bit more about. We look at Peter and his life, who denied Jesus 3 times, and he became the rock on which God built his church. And so sticking with Peter, if we move on to God's introduction, because it's a great one. Peter's life's a great example. What is it he said to Peter when he first met him? "You are Simon, son of John. You will be Cephas," also known as Peter. You see, God knows who you are and has chosen you just as you are, but he loves you too much to keep you that way. He sees you just as you are, but he wants to change you. And one of the first things I do when I turn up at a scene to negotiate with someone, the first thing I've got to emphasize to them is that I'm going nowhere. And you know, as you can imagine, I'm often told to go away, normally not that politely. And sometimes even just it's an indication that they want me to go away because they start throwing things, etc. But of all the things that I will do, and I'll be willing to be flexible on, the one thing that I stand on is that I'm going nowhere. There'll be a point where we can talk about what's brought you here, but for now, no matter how much pain I have to take in terms of abuse, I'm going nowhere. And see, in God's introduction to us, he's saying, you know, I chose you, and I will never leave you or forsake you. It says in Psalm 91, verse 15, I will be with you in trouble. Can we just go back to the introduction slide? Sorry, we've moved on a bit. And he says, you know, I've chosen you and I'm going to be with you. And you might be at the point where you've got lots of emotion going on just now because your circumstances are challenging. God's waiting for you to claim that for your own, to say, even in this, I am going nowhere. You know, we talk about emotions, and I'll talk more about that next week when we look at active listening. When we're emotional about something, we stop listening. That's a physiological fact. If we feel a strong emotion, good or bad, it absolutely clouds out our ability to think logically and rationally. So when I turn up and people are venting at me, I've got to wait. I've got to wait until that emotion moves so that I can move into the next step. And see, God's waiting for you to recognize that he's going nowhere. You might be angry at him, or you might be disappointed, but he's going nowhere, and he's never going to leave you. And once we get past and we accept that we have been chosen just as we are, not to stay that way, because you might think, you know, there's so much in my life. If I was to give you all of the examples of my life that would give an indication that, do you know what? God doesn't choose perfection. He chooses people as they are because he sees who they're going to be. And so accepting that introduction, and when the people that I'm with accept that introduction, we then can move on to empathy, which is our next step in the behavioral change process. We need to be able to empathize. And actually, what is empathy? So empathy is about being able to understand and share in someone's feelings, which I thought was quite interesting when I actually started writing it, because understand, if you take the you and the share, you get an us. And that's the point. The you and the yes bring us together and see us. And this is the point where I've got to remind the person that's in crisis that it's not just them, that it's me and them. And together, we're going to have to try and work this out somehow. And you see, God, who knows everything, knew that he had to demonstrate empathy. You know, he's given us his word, but he had to demonstrate that he would understand our feelings. And he did that by sending Jesus. And as we see in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him would not perish, but have eternal life. Thanks, Shona. A well-known verse. Because despite God knowing everything, he recognized it's not enough to know it unless you feel it. Maya Angelou, who was an American civil rights activist, once said, people will forget what you say. People will forget what you do. But people will never forget how you made them feel. And you see, Jesus can empathize because he felt it. He felt rejection. He felt pain. He felt suffering. And because of that, he can genuinely share and understand. And when I turn up and I teach our negotiators, I remind them, you know, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. I might have all the answers to the problem. And often you find as police officers, we want to solve things really quickly because usually we've got another few problems to move on to. But if I don't empathize, if I don't demonstrate that I can share and understand their feelings, I will never influence their behavior. And God knew that too. The God who knows everything, who knows the answer, who knows what you need in your life, also knew that his words alone would not influence your behavior and change it. He had to demonstrate that he could understand and share in our feelings, and he did that through Jesus. So if you're not changing today, and you've already accepted the introduction that you know that God has chosen you and that he's never leaving you, perhaps you're maybe stuck on this step where you find that although you know the words, you haven't really taken time to experience and feel what it means to truly take as your own the fact that God loved you so much, he demonstrated it through sending Jesus. But once I've empathized with them, I'm ready to move on up the staircase, and we move on to trust. And you see, it's easy to say the words, trust me. It's easy for me to walk up to someone in crisis and say, you know, you just need to trust me. But as you know yourself, actions speak louder than words. And you see, God knows that too. We need to be able to put his words into practice. We need to test them out. You know, there are over 7,000 promises from God in the Bible. If we truly believed them, would we ever be in crisis? Never. So the reality is, we can say the words, trust me. Or you can say the words, I'm trusting God. But if you've never experienced it and put it to the test in your own life, then you've never felt it. And if you haven't felt it, it's not real. It's real for a moment because you can talk about it, but it will not sustain you when some trials and troubles come because you've never felt that trust in your life where you've really put it to the test. And Peter, again, is a great example. Remember what Peter said? Do you remember what he said when, just before Jesus was going to be put on the cross? Even if all fall away on account of you, Lord, I never will. I would even die for you. Okay, stand by, Peter. And what happened? His faith was put to the test. And Jesus already told him and knew how he would respond to it. Peter, before the cock crows, you're going to deny me 3 times. You see, Peter was boasting of his faith. And so God tested his faith, and he failed miserably. But actually, if you go on to you will be, he still became this person that denied Jesus 3 times before his death, had seen his miracles, still became the rock for the church. And you see, my challenge this week was, I was quite confident, sitting doing my preparation all week. God calls me, he equips me, fabulous. I wasn't fabulous, absolutely. I wasn't supposed to be on call this week. I got put on call. That was okay. It was a fingers crossed most nights of the week, hoping that not very much would happen. I was all geared up for my last bit of preparation yesterday and ended up out the house from 6 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock last night. Did I say, oh, that's okay. That's fine because, you know, God calls me equipped. No. I went into a mini panic, thinking, oh my goodness, that was my last day of preparation before this morning. And you see, I was just saying the words. God calls me, equips me. I didn't claim it for my own. I didn't experience it for my own. God caused me to experience it for my own because he took me away from what I was going to be studying for today. Not because I didn't know it. Of course, I'd done the preparation long before then. But you see, the discipline in policing makes you make sure you've got everything crossed and dotted. And therefore, what would I have been relying on standing in front of you today? My experience as a police officer, not on God. And so God put that to the challenge for me, very real this week. And so I would say to you, the words that you say, either to yourself or to your friends, to your colleagues, either truly test them out or don't say them until you're ready to have them tested out. Because if you say them, God wants you to feel them. Because when you feel them, you can claim them as your own. And when you get to the point that you've claimed all 7,000 promises in the Bible, you'll be in a good position. So once we've done the trust, and it says the verse that we've got there, behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. And what he's promised you is that he's got a plan and a purpose for your life. And because of that, you can know that stability. You can know that peace. And when I am able to demonstrate that the person can trust me, the person that's in crisis can trust me, and there's lots of different ways that I do that, and I don't obviously have time to talk through all of them. But once I can demonstrate that I can be trusted, I then move on to influence. And you see, it's at this point that I can start to get them to focus beyond the present. It's here where my policing experience can come in, because although I might have known what the answer was even as I arrived, unless I've demonstrated that I'm going nowhere because I care, that I could empathise with why they're feeling as they are, until I've demonstrated that I can be trusted, I've got no hope of being able to help them solve that problem. But when I get to that point when I can do it, I start to take them beyond the present. Because what makes it a crisis is that person's response to what they're facing. And I've got to remind them that the present isn't permanent. And we've got lots of examples in the Bible where God tells us that the present isn't permanent, that he wants us to fix our eyes in the future. And then he gives us, when I speak to someone in crisis, I talk about other people that have faced similar scenarios because it gives them confidence. And you see, the Bible's full of people that we can learn from to either avoid danger or how we can still recover from it. Ample evidence that we can start to really help them see beyond their present. If we go back, if you're able to go back to the second slide, the person standing on the bridge. This person was standing on the bridge. Look where his eyes are. Down. And when your eyes are down and fixed on your problem or your situation or your crisis, that's where you're going to get stuck. And one of the first things we would have been asking him to do is to lift his head up. To lift his head up and see that there's another option, because when his head's down, he's going down. And just in terms of reassurance, that was a real case. He did jump, but he did survive. It's on the North Bridge in Edinburgh. But we use that as an example for our negotiator to say, look at the position that he's in at the moment. Where are his eyes fixed? Where are your eyes fixed this morning? You see, it tells us, and if we go back to our verse at influence, it tells us, so we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Because what is seen is temporary, no matter whether it's good or bad. If you're feeling fantastic this morning, it's temporary. Just a pessimistic polis for you. It is temporary. Even if you feel good for the rest of your life here, it's temporary. You know, the reality is, what will absolutely last is the part that's unseen. We need to fix our eyes on the future. And so I do that when I'm speaking to someone by getting them to see beyond their circumstances. An example would be, so when you come down, how will you do that safely? Tomorrow, when you're speaking with your daughter, what you're actually subtly doing is saying, you can get beyond this. This isn't the end. Actually, there was a quote that I saw when I was looking through, and it said, you know, everything will be okay in the end, which is what God promises us. And the point is, if everything's not okay, it's not the end. So actually, we can get beyond this. Whatever it is you face, we can move beyond it, because the present isn't permanent. And then, you see, if we fix our eyes on Jesus, what happens? Our behavior changes. And we read in Matthew how Peter's behavior changed. You see, we read in Matthew 14:22-26 about the fishermen heading across. Jesus had told them to go on ahead and he would join them. And you actually read that same story in John, and it tells you about the number of hours that they had been battling against this sailing, which should only have taken them a short time because they were well used to it. But actually, the wind and the waves were so difficult that they were really struggling. And what happened? They saw Jesus coming where? on top. Remember, he was on top of the storm. He didn't stop. He didn't change the circumstances. He was on top of the storm. And again, good old Peter. His faith was so strong that he believed that God could make him, or Jesus could get him to walk on water too. And what did he do? He got out the boat, he fixed his eyes on Jesus, and he experienced behavioral change that I would love to have in my experience. But he walked on water. That is an amazing behavioral change, wouldn't you say? Absolutely. His eyes were fixed on Jesus and his behavior changed. But what happened when he took his eyes off Jesus? He began to hear the storm. He began to see the storm and he began to sink. So his behavioral change lasted only a short time because again his faith was put to the test. And what did he do? He cried out and God helped him. But had he kept his eyes fixed on Jesus, he would have remained alongside him on top of that water. So you see, for us as Christians, or those of us who are not Christians, what this is telling us about is that, you know what, God has chosen us. That's why you're here. He's chosen you just as you are, but he loves you too much to leave you that way. He's chosen you, and he can empathize with you because he loved you so much he sent Jesus. And that demonstrated his love for us that we can claim as our own. And then he can be trusted, but we need to claim those promises and that trust as our own. We need to be able to experience it. We need to feel it in our life for it to be long-lasting. And if we keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, we'll recognize that the present isn't permanent. If our eyes are on eternity, if that's our goal, then actually our behavior will change. And you see, when behavior changes, the crisis stops. That's the sole purpose of us as negotiators when we turn up to a scene, is to influence behavior. Why? Because it stops being a crisis. Not because the events have changed. I don't have a magic wand. I can't change the situation or the scenarios that have brought that person to crisis point. But it stops being a crisis when I can get them to think about it in a different way. And so I can influence their behavior and it stops being a crisis at that point. And so sometimes you might think, well, as I've mentioned, you know, all these things you face, is that God's way of punishing us because we've made a bad choice? Absolutely not. God wasn't punishing Peter. God was letting him recognize that through time and pressure, he was going to be what he intended him to be, which was the rock of the church that he would build his church on. He saw him just as he was, but he also saw him as he was going to be. And so, for me, I would ask you this question. Are you stuck on a step? Are you still changing? Will you have changed this week through all of your experiences when you come back next week? Because like the Chinese symbols, God sees your reaction to crisis response as his opportunity to change you. From my own personal experience, I know I've made choices that have presented danger. But you see, even in that scenario, when life is at risk, God can still turn it around as his opportunity to change it into who he intends you to be. And so I would just encourage you this morning to look at your own life and to recognize that, as it says in Psalm 91, no matter what you face, however small or however big, God's right there with you. And in Psalm 91, if you read that and you claim those words as your own, not only is God going to protect you, he's going to honor you. And so my plea to you this morning is to honestly look at your life and to pray not for a change of circumstances when the drama unfolds, but to genuinely pray that God will change you in the circumstances, because that's what his intention is. And like I say, just if you get through that one, there's another one coming round the corner. Because he who started a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Jesus Christ. And so until that day, we need to keep changing. Let's just pray. Lord, we just thank you that you love us as we are, that you've chosen us just as we are, but that your intention for us is to change into who you want us to be. We thank you that you know the past, the present, and the future. We just pray that no matter what we face, whether good or bad, that we will look at those circumstances and we will see it as an opportunity for you to change us in those circumstances. That our eyes will truly be fixed on eternity. That we'll claim your promises as our own. And that in doing so, we will continue that productive change in our lives that will lead not just us, but others to know what it is to love you and to have you living in our lives until you come again. So I just ask that you will bless everyone here and that you will bring them back again next week. Amen.